Look at that. Yeah. How was that, Mitch? Oh, this is
awesome.
This is like the real deal now.
Oh, awesome, man.
People can see us, and now it's scary.
We're for real now. We're live.
There you go. We're not quite live. But
well, we're mostly, yeah. I'm just on my third cup of coffee today, you know.
Our guest today is Terry Blankenship.
Yeah, man.
He is a guide, and we've actually, both of us, been in the boat with him.
I've never had more fun going all day without catching a keeper fish in my life as I have with Terry.
So, Terry, what's it like
hanging out? You know what I'm talking about.
What's it like hanging out with Mitch and not being able to catch fish? Is he a jinx? Tell us. Give us the scoop.
Nope, there wasn't no jinx to it. We just hit a body of water at the time that wasn't putting out much fish, and about the only way that they were being caught was by trolling, which we turned around the next few days and got after them doing that, and it was very successful that way. I felt like the fish were really pretty much suspended out over main water, which made them pretty difficult to catch. So by trolling, we wound up pulling a lot of fish in by picking them up out suspended. So, you know, that's what I'm gonna blame it on. And that's kind of how the fishermen are, you know. You've got to have an excuse. But
well, we covered some miles that day trolling, too, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Miles. Isn't there a song like that? Miles and miles and miles. And I trolled for miles and miles.
That's all right.
Yeah. We put a lot of meat in the boat over those miles, too. So
yeah.
It was a rare experience for me. I'm not a trolling type person, and I've had the opportunity to do it, but it's just something I try to avoid as much as I can. But it was apparent that was the most successful way to catch fish at that particular time.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Terry, and what you do.
All right. Well, I'm retired. I just retired. At least I turned 65. I'm actually fishing. for fishing, that's my retirement. But I was born and raised in a little town in Iberia, Missouri, which is like 20 miles pretty much straight east of Lake of the Ozarks. And I always fished down here, and all my work was always at the lake area. I've been in construction all my life. And so that kind of mixed hand in hand. And one of the privileges of getting rained out was I got to go fishing on the rainy days. And my dad was a fisherman, and he instilled the passion for fishing in me. And so from that point on, it's going to be tough for me ever get a rod out of my hand. I love fishing.
Yep.
So you're a full-time fishing guide on Lake of the Ozarks.
I am. I just mostly just do for crappie fishing, and our lake is really, really got a lot of crappie in it. Not really in the big size, but we get a lot of real nice fish that have really come. And I think it's partly we've had about two or three good hatches in a row of fish, and a lot of floods, which brought up a lot of dirty water. And I think, and Dad always said that it would actually make fishing better over a period of time, and it has. You know, we've had back-to-back-to-back years of flooding, and it seemed like our fishing's just getting better and better and better. So it's really fun whenever you can go out and know you're probably going to catch fish.
Yep. That lake is full of them, too.
Yeah. No, it's very blessed. I've had a few days in the last week where I'm getting ready for some trips, and you know, I probably pull 60 to 100 keepers a day pretty quick, you know, And so, you know, the fishing's really good, and it's always been something to do with around deer season. It seemed like the fish really start feeding aggressively and just fattening up for the winter. I think that's pretty much the case. And so right now the fishing's just on fire, and it's a lot of fun.
Right. So you talk about fishing right now. Because we're going to air this out, what would you do to catch a crappie like right now on Lake of the Ozarks, and into December?
Yeah. Well, there's probably three or four different ways to fish this lake. I'm sure you could still catch some trolling, but what I have noticed lately is these fish have really started hugging the brush a lot more and the docks.
Right.
Lake of the Ozarks has probably got as many or more docks than about any lake in the country. So you develop patterns off of docks too, you know, just like patterns of open water, you know. It might be that it's going to be a main channel pattern of docks, or it may be around on the inside of a secondary, or maybe in the back of coves. And so right now we've actually got two good patterns going, and it depends on what part of the lake I'm on too, because I was in the Niangua yesterday, and those fish up there were in shallow water patterns, and the fish on the low end of the lake a few days prior was in deep water patterns. So, you know, it's just part of it. You got electronics on. Most people's got the good electronics on their boats, and I've got really good stuff. And, you know, so I won't fish unless I see them. And it's the way I do it, and that's part of the fishing. Part of fishing to me is just figuring it out, and I really enjoy that.
Well, that Lake of the Ozarks, you keep saying pattern, pattern, pattern. It is. I've fished all over the country, and it's probably the number one pattern lake. Repeatable pattern lake that I've ever seen in my life. It's like you figure out what's working today, and you can just have a field day. I mean, you can just repeat it over and over.
Right. Yeah. Yesterday was a bad, bad windy day, and I got into a pattern yesterday in which you could, and I was dock shooting, and you couldn't fish any areas that had that main wind blowing to it. There just wasn't any way of doing it. And so, fortunately, you know, this lake's got a lot of bends and winds in it. So what you kind of look for is, like, my pattern yesterday was kind of the flats, you know, where the water had just not, wasn't real deep, and seemed like there's a lot of shad in it. Right. And so I started finding a lot of crappie in those kind of places. And what it boiled down to, with all the bends in the lake, you'd have to maybe run 2 to 5 miles to maybe find the next spot that had fish, just because you had to be able to fish it. Due to the wind, it limited the places you could fish. So there was a lot of places in between that probably would have had fish, but, you know, I would jump from, you know, a mile to 2 or 3 miles to find my next spot, but it worked every time. So it was a great day, just, you know, figuring it out.
Yep.
So you were a dock fishing. What were you using for a rod when you were dock fishing?
I'm a loose guy. I use a 6-7 neb rod to a 7-foot LWS rod. These are actually bass rods. They're medium light action. I want something that's got some backbone, because I shoot very hard. I try to put a jig as far back under dock as I can possibly do it. So, you know, whenever you want to get the power to get that shot in there, you know, you need that stouter rod, which is the reason why I went to a bass rod. I've always been the type that liked one that was fairly stout, you know, that I never did like the flimsy rods, and there's the next guy will. So it's just personal preference.
Right.
Yeah, and that's a longer rod than normal, like most of them. Is that correct?
Correct. I think most crappie rods are an average of 6 foot, you know, 5'6" to 6 foot is what a lot of people use just for traditional fishing. You know, not far as trolling or anything like that, but traditionally it would be 5.5 to 6 foot. And I don't own a rod less than 6 foot. So, you know, everything I got goes from there up. But it's my style, how I fish. I don't knock anybody's preference in rods and all that tackle, but it works for me. And, you know, that's what you got to figure out, what works for you.
So if you weren't shooting docks, what was the other technique that you're using to catch crappie this time of year?
Yeah, well, I got a lot of structure I put out. Uh-huh. And so, you know, same thing, use electronics to locate the structure. And the best case scenario is when you spot a good brush pile and you can see fish above it. Most of the time when you see that, you know the fish are going to be active. And so that's whenever I would just cast and retrieve. And I would use a count. I'm a big on count. I do it automatically. I don't even know I'm doing it a lot of times, but I do it automatically. But if I see fish are in 8 foot of water, I'll do a 6-7 count just to try to stay above them. I just can't fish below fish, you know, for the fact that I've watched the crappie in my life to go down and follow a bait down, but I've never seen one hitting it go down.
Right.
But I've seen them catch it coming down or follow it down and then hit it when it's coming back up. So, but two key things to me is, if you find fish that's suspended, try to fish as shallow as you can starting. And you can pick off the fish off the top, because if you catch the fish below them and drag it through them, you know, you're more apt to spook that school up.
Right.
And so traditionally, I always try to start the top, and most of my clients, I always right off the top, I'll say, here's our count. And once they understand what I'm doing, then they follow up on it and understand why. And so what it boils down to is you just try to fish above them. And whenever those fish kind of, if I get them to bite and they start where I don't catch many or can't catch many, then I'll move over the top of them and I'll vertical fish them. And then I'll do the same thing. I'll try to stay on top of them.
Right.
And I do a lot of fishing seminars for Bobby Garland. And one of the tricks that I call is my Snickers candy bar trick. And everybody looks at me for fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should get a sponsorship for Snickers because I practice this a lot. But a Snickers candy bar sitting within my reach, even if I'm not hungry, eventually I'm going to grab that thing and eat it because I love Snickers candy bar. And so I did this. I've seen this happen where I tried everything in the world to catch crappie I could see in clear water and couldn't get them to bite. So finally, one day, I just started holding that jig right over one's head, maybe 6 inches above it, and it was the biggest fish in there. And I stood there and held it for, seemed like a couple minutes. It probably wasn't that long. But all of a sudden, it just sucked it up.
He'd had enough. He had to have him a Snicker bar, huh?
Yep, he had a Snickers. And then after that, I could almost catch every fish I could see. And so what I'm getting at is whenever you get on top of these fish, a lot of times if they're not real active, you know, if you know that they're there, you know, that gives you enough confidence to go ahead and give patience to sitting that jig there and just letting it soak. You don't have to do anything.
Right.
And I've caught an awful lot of good fish doing that. I've done it accidentally several times and finally caught on to what's going on.
Yeah.
So now I know why it happens. And once you understand why fish do what they do, it just mentally helps you a lot in your ability to catch more fish.
I've had other people tell me they could see them like under boat docks and stuff and couldn't get them to bite. And they would lay their rod down. Same type of deal. They just absolutely lay their rod down.
Yep. I have done exactly the same thing to people I work in fishing. And I've told them, you watch this. And, you know, and it may take a while, but if you know they're there, they'll hit it.
Right.
It definitely is a guerrilla tactic.
So you've been talking about electronics, so I've been on your boat. So tell people, how are the electronics laid out in your boat? Where's the units located? You know, what units you have? And tell us, as you're fishing, how you're using those units.
Yeah, well, I'm very fortunate. You know, I've gotten sponsored up by Hummingbird Minn Kota. You know, and I know there's a lot of great electronics out there. And it's kind of like your Ford, Chevy, Dodge thing. You've got a lot of people that like certain ones and have better luck with them. But me personally, I've been a Hummingbird guy ever since they come out with side imaging. And so, but I've got my boat set up where I've got it really a pretty big setup. But I've got two units on the back. They're both SI Helix 3s. And I got two on the front. They're SI Helix 3s, Gen 3s, and then I got a 360 Mega up front. And with that, what I do typically, especially if I get in strange water that I'm not familiar with, I will start to scan, and then I'll set my units, one unit up for scan, and I have a map on, and I have 2D, and I have down imaging, because I can actually, with four units, and I can go ahead and set it all up where I can see everything it has to offer, and that's a very big advantage. And so once I locate something, I've got everything Ethernet tied. You know, I can make a waypoint with one of my back units off of the 2D or DI or SI, and it Ethernet's tied to the front, and it'll just transfer that waypoint to my front unit, which gives me something to line up on. And then with the 360 rolling, you know, I can just kind of watch for it and keep my direction with that 360, whichever way that the structure is that I'm fishing. So, you know, it's an amazing setup. It will produce, if you have the ability to catch the fish, it will give you that opportunity. I'll put it that way.
Right.
Yeah, and actually Mega 360 works even when you're sitting still. Isn't that correct?
Correct, yeah. It's an amazing tool. They've had the Gen 1, we call it, let's say, the first generation 360. And then when they came out with the Mega, it's, you know, it was probably, I would have to say it's twice as good as the other one for detail. Wow. Wow. And detail is the key. You know, there's a lot of times whenever you really look hard at a electronics, you'll see that little extra detail that gives you that edge to maybe fish a spot or just locate fish or some kind of structure. And with that Mega, it's amazing tool. It truly is. I've had people in my boat that's got all the electronics of the other brands, and you know, and they're impressed with it. You know, like I said, again, everybody's got their opinion on electronics, and I know the live scope has been probably a dominant type electronics for the last few years, but they've all got something ready for that, you know, to match yeah. up. It's all good.
Yeah, rumor has it that there's other brands besides Garmin that is going to release, and that's pretty obvious. It's going to happen, so we're just everyone's just basically, I think, waiting to see. And even this past week, we saw a little release on something, but you know, we'll let that play out, and then we'll get some of the people in the industry. We'll get them to visit about it as they actually make some official press releases on that.
Yeah, it's exciting, you know, knowing there's more stuff coming. Yep. And I don't think there's a whole lot of us that would like to see it. Really, you don't know where this is going to end. I mean, it's right. Going to get better and better.
Oh, and you still got to catch them, don't you, Terry? You can see them all day long, catch them.
Yeah, that really is still a big part of it, because nowadays people are so dependent on them. And I get that way. You know, I'm dependent on them just to locate fish, you know, like crappie. I don't stop unless I see fish on my electronics. I can't say that about bass. Bass is a little more elusive, not near as many fish on out there, and they're not quite the same type patterns you look for always. Not right. that there isn't the same patterns, but it's a different animal. And far as, you know, I'm more looking for structure whenever I'm bass fishing than I am when I'm crappie fishing. Crappie right. fishing, obviously, I'm looking at structure, but I'm looking to see if there's fish in it. And to get back to that other style of crappie fishing, I'll drop a vertical jig right in the middle of a brush pile when I can sit right on top of them. And so that, again, is another electronic advantage, you know, to be able to put you right on top of it.
Right.
So break the lake down for us. For people that haven't been to Lake of the Ozarks, kind of break it down into, is there different sections of the lake? There's a clear end, and there's an end that's more dirty, so river arms. How does that break down?
Okay, well, Lake of the Ozarks is 92 miles long. It has three rivers that are feeder rivers, basically. The Osage is the main river. It flows from Truman Lake, which is fed from the western part of Missouri and Kansas.
Right.
And so the upper part of the Osage is the shallower, steady, shallow water, which it has a lot more mud because of not only that area of being shallow, it is kind of where Missouri starts flattening out a little bit in the plains.
Farmland.
And you don't have as much gravel there to filter through. And so, but the upper part of the Osage stays dirtier more than the main body of water as you come down the lake. You got the Niangua and the Little Niangua, which the Big Niangua has Hahatonka Spring, which pumps a lot of water into it, a lot of fresh water. And then the river itself is filtered with a lot of springs on up it, you know, that comes from as far as Bennett Springs up that direction, right. which has big springs. So it keeps a pretty steady income flow of water. And the Little Nine was a little smaller creek. And then far as, I guess, you can call it creek or river. And it's floatable a lot of times in the summertime, so we call it river. And then the glaze is a different arm altogether, and it's a river, and it doesn't get muddy as much. It has an area that has a lot of flats because of the shallow water, and once it's windy, it stirs it up pretty good. It can be pretty dirty, especially when there's a lot of wind, but it tends to clean pretty quick as it filters down. So, but those are your three main tributaries, the Nyanguas and the Glaze and the Osage River, main river.
Yep. And so where do you guide out of? Where do you normally go out of?
I'm pretty much centrally located around Osage Beach. I cover probably 40 miles of water from the dam, you know, all the way up to Glaze. I was born and raised closer in the Glaze area. That was my home water, I'd have to say. Uh-huh. And it's state park, a lot of surrounded state parks, so there's not as many docks up the Glaze, and it's kind of got a lot more open water to be able to fish. But I fish up as far as the 30 to 40 mile marker up the Osage. I really do cover a lot of water. You really need to be diverse in fishing. And, you know, and it's, I've got the privilege of being able to, I've got good equipment and got good access areas to get to these areas if I don't want to run by boat. Right. But, you know, our boats nowadays, you know, we're all running in the 60s and 70s. And so it really didn't take long to get there. But Lake Ozarks in the summertime is a true beating, you know, after the afternoon or the weekends because of the big boats we have that runs this lake. And so you need to just select your time or if it's going to be rough.
Yeah, boat rides aren't trailers, that much fun.
You know, you trailer, you know, it's going to be rough to the nearest area you want to fish. So, but there's this time of year, and quite honestly, this is probably one of the best winter lakes of crappie fishing that I'm familiar with. I mean, it partly is saved. The fish don't get bothered as much because of the big boat traffic, and I think that's what creates our good winter fishing.
Right.
But it's the calm season
for the fish.
Yeah, it's the, you know, and it's calm season for the fishermen too, because you can get out and go any direction you want without feeling like you're going to get beat up, other than dealing with the elements of weather. And it's a pretty healthy lake, you know, far as fertile for putting out a lot of fish. You know, it's got some monster catfish, a lot of spoonbill, crappie. I mean, it's always got crappie. I mean, there's going to be years when it's better than others, and right now we've got a pretty big crop of crappie that are just maybe just keeper size or maybe a little under. So there's some people saying, boy, I can catch a lot of fish, but
right,
go through them. But you know, you can run out of that in the next spot and they may all be keepers, and or vice versa. So but to me, that just means we got a lot of good quality fishing coming for the next several years. So
right.
I love it.
Yeah. So if people wanted to get hold of you, how would they get in touch with you?
I've got a website, terryblankenship.com. And they can reach me that way. Or I don't know if you want to take a phone number down. But,
sure.
But my number is 573-480-2835. And you know, I am fully retired, so, and you know, I don't try to get too busy, but you know, if I can get 2 or 3 trips a week, you know, I've guided since 1998, and I'm not going to say that I guided Mitch because it's on a foreign lake.
We were both put somewhere against our will that day. I need to let everybody know that.
Yeah.
we did as good as anybody else out there.
Oh, you did, and there's a lot of quality, big-name guys there, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, your trailing's what proved out, for sure. But I've, since 1998, and I will do this, and I will forever hold to it, I've never had a trip yet that I didn't catch fish. But I always tell people, if we don't catch fish, you don't pay. And I will honor that no matter what.
Makes a man work a little harder, don't it?
Yeah, it does. It's a good little prod, you know. But
yeah.
to this day, they've had to pay. So, you know.
God bless America, right?
I don't want that to ever change, but I'm not saying it can't, but I just don't think it can, you know, if we got an opportunity to get out there and spend some time.
All right. Well, that takes us up to tackle time. And time is sponsored by
Pico Lures.
That's right. Pico Lures. And of course, Mitch is the man behind it. Pico Lures was founded in 1933. Did you know that, Mitch?
That's right. Same year my daddy was born.
There you go. Pico Perch is famous for the perch, side shad. It's hard to say.
Super side shad.
Pop, little pop.
Yep.
And the crankbaits, INT crankbaits and the square bill. And there are plenty of them. And, of course, right now we have bass jig heads. Right now the hottest thing is the scope eyes.
And Terry, I tell you what, I need to get you some of these, buddy.
They are.
The heck out of them that day off of them.
Yeah. Well, this is new since I saw you last.
Brand new. Scope eye. They're for.
I made a review on crappie.com right now says a 16-ounce head on live scope looks like a 6 or 7 inch crappie.
Right. So that's what that's about. Tell us, Mitch, we were talking about traditional colors and traditional colors being. Fire tagger and this is, fire tagger's been around a long time. Man, some other traditional colors that Pico has?
Well, we've got. I guess it's almost traditional. We got sexy shad. That's become traditional.
Yeah,
I like whites and pearls myself.
Oh,
very fond of it.
Is that old school?
Well, to a degree, Pico would come out with that pearl white way back in the 40s, and they. Spiced it up by putting a blue eye on some and a pink eye on some, but it's still a pearl white bait. Really closely in the fall of the year, you start getting dirty water, and this is a bright color, and the whites are kind of a disappearing color, which is, you know, depending on the fish's mood, whether he wants something bright to aggravate him or he's used to eating shad. If you go out there and you net some shad right now, I guarantee you they're going to be ghostly white looking.
Right. So, Terry, what's a traditional color for you in crankbaits? What would you say?
Well, that white, that tradition is a great. Whenever you look at a fish that's wounded or maybe dying or dead, they kind of turn a pearl or white color.
That's right.
And for me, I know big fish aren't going to run all over the lake trying to get a meal. They want the easiest meal they can find.
They want a Snicker bar, right?
There you go. Well, whenever they see something that looks like it's about to die, that is an easy meal. So whenever you're putting something in front of them that has that kind of look to them, you know, you're just increasing your odds of catching fish. So that's what I would call the sexy shad is, like you said, it is for everything. For whatever it's worth, a chartreuse on a bait, I don't think there's anywhere that I've ever fished that chartreuse didn't kind of play into.
That is a fact.
The fishing somehow. And so you just can't go wrong with that kind of a setup. They've got baby bass colors, which, you know, I've drove those and a trout color. For a long time, that my main two colors would be a baby bass and a trout.
Okay.
And, for what it was worth, the trout color worked for whatever reason, I'm not sure. And it's just maybe it's in my head, but the trout color worked better in sunny days and the baby bass worked better on cloudy days. Okay. I don't know why, but that worked for me. It made me a lot of money. And so, you know,
that works. Money works.
I'm sticking to it.
All right. There you have it. Thanks for listening to the Fishing Guide Podcast. Mitch?
Yep. Join us back here next week. Tell us a few things you want to hear about. Terry, thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it and honor being there. And I hope everything goes great for the fishermen. And let's go catch some fish.
Let's do it.
For the Fishing Guide Podcast, keep your hooks wet and your lures in the water.